Hi, my name is Jamshid Vasuna, and as mentioned, today I'll be presenting an analysis of the effects of caching on mobile web page performance. So as some of you may know, Flywheel is Google's mobile compression proxy that was built to increase mobile web page performance. And in their recent NSDI paper, they reported a pretty interesting result, that increasing the cache hit ratio of their proxy from 22% to 32% caused only about a 1% to 2% reduction in mobile web page load time. That's extremely low. In fact, that's so low that the Flywheel authors thought that this effort wasn't even worthwhile. Now, to the Flywheel authors, some of whom are on this paper, this was a big surprise. If the authors had a deeper understanding of how caching affects mobile web page performance, they could have saved significant engineering efforts. So here I'll walk through what was going on so that hopefully other engineers and researchers can benefit from predicting the performance effects of caching on mobile web pages. So for the rest of this talk, I'll walk through a little background on how to measure web page load time for both desktops and mobile devices, as well as a simple model we developed to help predict the effects of caching on page load time. I'll also step through an analysis tool that we developed and some of the empirical results that were derived from this experimentation. So as most of you are well aware, loading a web page involves many concurrent tasks. The browser needs to fetch objects, parse and evaluate them, and finally render them in the UI. And because there's a lot of concurrency, it can help to understand the notion of a critical path. So the critical path, or the dotted red line, is the longest chain of dependent browser tasks, such that reducing the length of any task not on the critical path will not affect the overall latency of the web page. So here we are referring to the non-overlapping delays involved with parsing and rendering an object as its computational delay and its fetch delay as its network delay. So for example, if we were to decrease the network delay of the PNG object, the overall latency wouldn't change. And here we define the overall latency of a web page as the summation of all network and computational delays for all items on the critical path. So for example, the computational delays of the HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and JPEG objects determine the overall page load time. So with this in mind, we can develop a pretty simple back-of-the-envelope model for predicting page load time. So here we're estimating page load time with a specific cache hit ratio, or X. So C is the summation of all computational delays for objects on the critical path with a cold cache, so X equals 0. And similarly, N is the sum of all network fetch delays for all items on the critical path with a cold cache, again. K here is the fraction of objects on the critical path that are cacheable, so not necessarily cached. And X, of course, is our cache hit ratio. Just note that this is a strict subset of the objects on the web page that are cacheable. So here, 1 minus k times x represents the objects on the critical path that are not cached. And finally, we added this f of x term to account for the overlap in computational and network delays for items on the critical path. There are very few cases where the browser can concurrently load dependent browser tasks, but for the most part, we ignore this term as it's very close to zero. So in essence, this model is predicting the sum of computational and network delays for all items on the critical path that are not cached. So to build a better intuition for this, for these parameters, if we were to estimate the page load time with a cold cache, or a cache hit ratio of 0, this would just be C plus N, or the sum of computational and network delays for each object on the critical path. Now, in the other extreme, what if we had a perfectly cacheable web page? So every item on the web page is cacheable and is cached. So both x and k equal 1. So in this case, the extreme limit of page load time would just be c. So we're assuming that the cache is infinitely close to us. So every item in the web page incurs a network delay of 0. Now, obviously, this is not possible in reality. But it helps us set a mental model for the extreme limits of a page load time. Unfortunately, there's a great paper called WProf, which is a tool for measuring critical paths in the browser, that found k to be 0.2. So this means that the extreme upper bound benefit we can achieve with caching now becomes c plus 4/5 n, which isn't that great. But to make matters even worse, is that we estimated the ratio of C to N to be about 2 to 3 for mobile devices. So now our original page load time with a cold cache, let's call this PLT0 for simplicity, is about 5/2C. And our perfectly cacheable extreme bound page load time is about 11/5C. So this means that for an extreme case where we cache every object in a web page, our model is predicting that the best possible reduction in page load time a user can receive is only 12%. And that's with perfect caching. What's interesting is that for desktops, the ratio of C to N is about 1 to 6. So this means that our PLT0 is 7C, and our perfectly cacheable extreme lower bound case is 21/5C. So this implies that the best possible reduction in page load time for desktops is about 40%. So why are mobile devices so different than desktops? So here we recorded a web page and plotted the ratio of network to computational delays for its critical path. So as you can see on the right, the 0.11 represents the original page load time from the internet. And as we move to the left, we reduce the network delay for items in the critical path. And as you can see, when the network delays become 0, the page load time is still 20% of the original page load time. So this indicates that about 20% of the critical path is composed of computational delays. This means that if we had an infinitely fast CPU, as indicated by the lower comp equals 0 line, and set the network delay for all items on the critical path to 0, the expected page load time would be 0. Now, moving in the other direction, what if we slowed down the CPU to be about 1 gigahertz, as indicated by the upper blue line? So here, with no network delays, about 40% of the critical path is still composed of computational delays. So thus, we arrive at our C to N ratio of 4 to 6, or 2 to 3. Now, of course, this is only what our model is predicting, but we were very curious to see how closely this actually matches reality. So we developed a tool for measuring page load time in a controlled and reproducible manner for both desktops and mobile devices. This is an open source tool. There's a link at the end of the presentation. It's on GitHub. But very briefly, we used Google's Web Page Replay as a web proxy that records network requests, responses, their time delays, and can store this as a record in a local archive. And telemetry, which allows us to control a desktop and mobile browser and measure page load time. So with this, we took about 400 Alexa web pages and recorded the original page from the internet. So we captured all network requests, responses, their time delays, as well as the cold cache page load time. And we stored this in a local archive and then refetched every web page, this time serving content from that local archive. And we did this in two ways. First, with a perfect cache, where we set the RTT for every cacheable object in the web page to 0. And left the RTT for every non-cacheable object to its original value and measured the page load time. Then we did this again for a partial cache, where we set the RTT for every cache or for some percentage of cacheable objects to 0 and measured the page load time. And we repeated this for both desktops and mobile devices. And in this way, we were able to measure the effects of hypothetical levels of caching on both desktop and mobile browsers. So to get a sense of the workload of our data set, we noticed two things. First, that the majority of web pages are composed of highly cacheable bytes. So we would expect that caching would have a large benefit here. And second, that the median web page is fairly small. It's typically less than 1.2 megabytes. So with this, we were actually able to reproduce Flywheel's results. So we increased the cache hit ratio from 20% to 30%. And saw only about a 1 to 2% reduction in mobile web page load times. So we were able to validate our methodology by reproducing these results in a controlled and reproducible environment. So we took this to the extreme case of perfect caching. So here the fraction reduction in page load time, which is the x-axis, is the original page load time minus the page load time with a perfect cache divided by the original page load time. And as you can see, the median reduction in page load time for desktops is about 34%, while the median reduction in page load time for mobile devices is only 13%. And this is with a perfect cache. So not only is this a big difference, But our model predicted 12%, and here we're seeing 13%. So we were curious to see what resource was restricting mobile devices from benefiting from caching as much as desktops. It's possible that mobile devices are RAM bound, it's possible that they're CPU bound, or maybe both. So here we isolated both RAM and CPU in resource-constrained virtual machines in the same environment. So same network conditions, same data workload. And again, this is with the absolute best-case scenario of perfect caching. So as you can see here, the virtual machine constrained with CPU, or the green line, looks closer to a mobile device, while the virtual machine constrained with RAM looks very similar to a desktop. So this is a pretty interesting observation. CPU tends to be the key resource here, not RAM. But to further prove this to ourselves, we turn the CPU knob to see what would happen. So here we use several constrained virtual machines with varying levels of CPU. And here it becomes clear that as we throttle the CPU of the device, caching has a reduced impact on page load time. And this is indicated by lines that are farther to the top left. So devices with slower CPUs tend to benefit less from caching. Now, we know that a slower CPU will cause increased computational delays. So for a desktop, network delays tend to dominate computational delays. But as we're seeing here, for mobile devices, network delays are fairly comparable to computational delays. In fact, it's a ratio of about 2 to 3. And of course, this is all else being equal in terms of network delays and workload. But the main point here is that caching can only reduce N, not C. So the network performance benefits that caching offers don't really apply to mobile devices as much as we'd like them to. And in retrospect, the flywheel results aren't really that surprising. Increasing the cache hit ratio from 20% to 30% should really only have a fairly reduced impact on page load time. So if there's one takeaway from this entire presentation, perhaps it's that you should stop paying your CDN. Now, of course, there are many other benefits to a content delivery network besides end user latency. But if you do want to focus your efforts on caching, you can save significant amounts of time and money by focusing on caching items that are on your critical path first. And you can do this by utilizing protocols such as Speedy, HTTP2, and its object prioritization. So the key takeaway here is that caching doesn't reduce mobile web page load time as much as we'd like it to, primarily because items on the critical path are often not cacheable, and CPU tends to be a key bottleneck resource. So we hope that the model that we've developed here will help others reason about caching in a more insightful and thoughtful manner. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Juan Colmenares from Samsung. In the past, there are how do we accelerate the compute part and in the web browser and in the phone? So then has been in the past actually from Berkeley, some work on parallelizing the web browsers. Do you think that may alleviate the problem if we accelerate that compute part?
Definitely. So going back to our model, there's two components, computational delay and network delay. So as we're seeing now, the trend for mobile devices is that they're becoming more and more powerful. So with increased computational speeds, a mobile device is starting to act a lot more like a desktop. So in that case, caching, it does have a larger effect. But this is looking more towards the median case of mobile devices with slower CPUs.
Well, actually, a very similar question. I was going to say, it was a dramatic statement that you made saying, it's useless,
right,
to cache. But if you project further, presumably you'll have, there are already multi-core CPUs.
Right.
And so you'll tend towards the desktop. And so you'll get, say, median 40% improvement, which is, I guess, nothing to sneeze at, right?
That's fairly substantial, yeah. So that's a good question. Going forward from here, it's kind of fairly obvious that mobile devices are becoming more and more powerful. And that is definitely something to consider when, focusing your efforts on caching. Yeah.
So one comment. You mentioned that you should focus the optimization, if you can, on the objects that are in the critical path. But it's also likely that the critical path could change rather substantially because it's rather brittle, right? Like if you optimize something a little bit, maybe it shifts completely to another part of the set of things you have to do.
Definitely, yeah. So critical path analysis is a little tricky in that if you start changing things, the entire critical path can change. But as we're seeing here, the critical path is kind of the longest latency that a user can observe with a web page. So that's kind of the first point of attack. As you start reducing your critical path, other objects will start coming into it, and then you want to refocus your efforts on those.
Right. So,
One question. Nitin Agarwal, Samsung Research. So one of the benefits of a cache is when you actually have subsequent interactions with the same page, then you know you actually don't have to go fetch that object from the from over the wire. Did you, in your experiments, focus entirely on the initial load of the web page, or did you actually conduct any experiments where you would then, you know, click something on the page which would fetch another object, or you know, reuse some of the same object that were fetched where the cache would actually, you know, come to, you know, be useful?
Yeah, right. So there's several metrics for measuring page load time. One of them is time to first byte, which I think you're kind of alluding at. And we used the other side of the metric, which is the JavaScript's onload event. So as soon as all objects in the browser have finished loading. So to that point, it's very interesting to see that we actually reloaded the web page entirely, so not time to first byte. So when we reload a web page, we're actually loading all of its objects, and then we reload it again with a warm cache and then a hot cache. So we are actually measuring the effect of all objects in the web browser. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, I was just kind of thinking of what would be other interesting ways to kind of measure the utility of a cache. For example, having a session where a user is interacting with the same site over a 3 minute or, I don't know, some arbitrary time period, and actually see how that performance varies over the cache hits you're getting in the web cache.
Yeah. So there are definitely many other metrics for measuring web page performance in terms of caching. Some of them more reproducible than others. But in our experiments, we use kind of just a very static web page load.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but you also varied the hit rate in your model, right? Like in your experiments.
Correct.
So he did experiment loading the same page with very different sets of hit rates on the cache. And in the limit, still you had bounded effects.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Last question.
Hi, Atatürk from Boston University. If I remember right, in the same NSDI, there was a paper from people from Baidu, and they were showing that caching helped a lot to their system because the bandwidth between the available bandwidth to the users in China, mobile users especially, was very, very low. So in your model, I'm not sure if you're accounting that into the equation.
Are you referring to kind of longer RTTs for especially places in rural areas where they're lengthy? So definitely. So as long as you increase the N constant in our model, which is increasing RTT, you will see that cache does have a slightly larger effect because you are reducing that large component.
Yeah, basically, impact of N is, even though you showed in these experiments are not, probably it's based on the N that you selected.
Right, so we did run this over UC Berkeley's network, but that is definitely something that you can vary with our model and also the apparatus on GitHub, that you can kind of play around and set hypothetical levels of N to see how that affects page load time.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure the message you give is, you have to say that in some sense.
Yes, yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's thank Jamshed again.